Welcome to Time to Recover. This workshop is Time to Change, Step 6 and 7. I'm delighted to introduce our speaker, Tony Ann. A warm welcome to you. At this time, you may begin your presentation.
Thank you so much, Tim. Hi, everybody. I'm happy to be here today. My name is Tony Ann. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And I'm speaking today about Step 6 and 7. Were we thinking about ourselves most of the time? And yes, I was thinking about myself. I used to say that I was a legend in my own mind. So when I came into this program, I wanted so badly to be different. I wanted to change. I wanted my body to be different. I wanted to be like everybody else. I wanted to be able to eat like everybody else. I wanted to be able to wear the clothing that I saw everybody else doing. But no matter what I tried, it just was not working for me. And I was perplexed. I did not understand why this was so. So it's been a beautiful journey. I'll just give you just very quickly that day happened in October. I think it was October 20th in the year 2000. That was the first time that I came into program. I came in, I had two options. One, I was going to admit myself into an inpatient food program. The second was to try Overeaters Anonymous and see if it worked for me. Because you see, I had been binging and purging since I was 14 years old, and it was out of control. It was out of control. Even though I had been purging, I was still morbidly overweight. I was 234 pounds at my highest. I gave birth to my second child and could not get out of my maternity clothes. I could not. And I really did believe that food was the problem. I like to share just briefly that, as a matter of fact, I went for hypnosis and I wanted to get hypnotized because I really believed that if I stopped eating at night, that I would be cured. And so I'm at this hypnosis session and the practitioner is putting me under hypnosis. And all of a sudden I hear the snoring, but it's not me. Apparently he had made himself fall asleep. And I came out of there. I was so upset. I turned on the radio. I was blasting music. And then this was at the time when there was commercials. A commercial came on and there's this commercial for this breast cancer 60 mile walk for 3 days to raise money for breast cancer. I didn't hear the raise money for breast cancer part. All I heard was walk 60 miles. And my bulimic mind said, if I walk 60 miles, I'll lose weight and be cured. So I signed up for this trip. And the reason I'm telling you that is because it was during this trip that I was introduced to Overeaters Anonymous. I was 12-step. Shortly after the trip, I came into my first meeting. Obviously, this walking 60 miles did not help me. I came into my first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, and I heard this message. At that time, I did everything I was asked to do. It was mostly a tool-based program that I worked, and I checked off everything. I checked sponsor, check, food plan, check. Check, check. And I did lose weight. I lost 60 pounds when I came in the beginning. And what I didn't really do though, is I didn't really change inside. I never had a spiritual awakening. I never had a change. My outside changed, but the inside did not change. And after a very long time, 14 years, maybe 12 or 14 years, what happened was I couldn't stay abstinent any longer. Because the tools just weren't keeping me abstinent. I eventually went out, I relapsed, and it got so, I had basically every type of wreckage, legal problems, relationship problems, financial problems. I was like living in the bedevilments. And so I finally, when I came back into program, I heard this woman and she scared the hell out of me with the way she spoke because she was so passionate. And every time she shared, the change in her life had been so profound that she would start crying. And I was scared of her. And I asked her to be my sponsor anyway. And she took me through the 12 steps as they were written in the big book. And I learned that I had been missing a whole bunch of the program that I had not been actually working in the past. And so I was told to live in steps 10, 11, and 12. And in doing these step 10s, when I did a step 10, I was inventorying like a resentment or a fear or a harm that I did and coming up with a list of character defects. And it's taken me quite a long time to realize that the biggest problem I have is not food, it's my character defects. You know, I hurt myself. That's, I mean, if I was born probably in the, you know, later than I was, maybe I would have been like one of those people that did the cutting that actually hurt themselves. But I wasn't that sophisticated when I was young. You know, I just started hurting myself with food. But I wasn't just hurting myself with food. I was hurting myself with thoughts. And I was hurting myself with my actions. And those were the things that I needed to really change. It wasn't just about changing my food and what I ate and how much I ate. It was about changing my thoughts and changing my actions. And so one of the things that I learned just very recently, probably in the past 24 months, is that, and I think they should teach this in school, my thoughts control my feelings and my feelings control my actions. And I'm going to say it again. My thoughts control my feelings and my feelings control my actions. Now, feelings are organic responses to stimulus. They're not done by me. I cannot control my feeling because it just happens naturally. Just like when it's freezing outside, I get cold. I do not have the ability to say to myself, no, you're not cold, or don't be cold. It just happens. The same thing happens when I am sad or whatever, any type of an organic response. It's a stimulus to something that I'm thinking. But what's really funny is, you ever sit in a room and all of a sudden somebody says, like, you're perfectly fine. And somebody says, wow, it's really cold in here. And then you realize that you're cold. Or I could give you another example. Do you ever cut yourself and didn't know you were hurt until you saw the blood? And then when you saw the blood, you're like, ow, but didn't hurt you like a minute ago if you didn't know about it? Because my feelings come from what I'm thinking. My actions, now I then react based on what I feel, because my feeling is telling me to do something. My feeling is causing me to have a reaction. So then I have a reaction. So what I can, the only thing that I can change, and this goes into the serenity prayer, right? The courage to change the things I can, right? The wisdom to know the difference. I can change my thoughts. But how is it that I change my thoughts? And that's really, for me, where the fundamental transformation has happened in my life. Because this program has essentially given me a roadmap to change the way that I think. And because I've been able, through the help of the 12 steps, to change the way that I think, it's changed the way that I feel. And because I've changed the way that I feel, I now am able to change the way that I behave and my actions. Well, you might be wondering, exactly how do I do that? Well, it's a lot like, say, I was going to physical therapy. I don't know if anybody's ever been injured or had to go to physical therapy or anything. They make you go there and they show you what to do. And then they tell you to do it again, 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 repeat 10 repetitions, 20 repetitions. So it becomes repetition is the way that I'm able to make a correction and keep that correction in place. And by making that repetition, doing it over and over again, what happens is it becomes like a muscle memory. And then, like, for example, I always like walk with my foot pointed out and it was causing me foot pain. So now I have to consciously say to myself, point my foot in. And so when I'm walking, after I keep practicing, sometimes I have to like look at my foot while I'm doing it. But then after a while, it becomes almost like more comfortable and automatic, where I put my foot pointed in instead of out, and then I stopped having the pain. Well, the way that I do that in program is by inventorying when I feel restless, irritable, or discontented. I inventory that so that I can take a look at what exactly is causing that and what character defects is causing that. So I do a step 10. And when I do a step 10, I look at what is my part in something. When I look at what is my part, I look at what is it affecting? It's affecting usually some type of an instinct in me. Like it comes from an instinct. What is my instinct? Is it security? Is it something that I'm trying to do? Is it my ambition? Is it my relationships that it's affecting? What is it affecting? And from there, I then look at what is my part in it. And what is my part is not always the easiest thing to get to. Oftentimes, if I'm in person, I used to have a ball, like a little plastic ball, and I would write my part on it. And I would throw it around while I was talking and let people pass it around like you're at a concert, because I wanted to remind people with a visual that sometimes you have to roll the ball back. Sometimes in order to get to what my part is, I have to roll the ball back to see where I set the ball rolling, so to speak. There's a saying in program, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So if it's causing something is really causing me to get triggered, it's because it's coming from something in the past that's causing me to have that trigger. So it's my job in my step 10 is to look at what exactly is that. Let me see if I could give you an example. Okay, my example could be that the person in the food store line is taking too long to take they're taking too long to check me out and I'm in a hurry. You know, so what would be my part in it? I've looked back and my part is probably like, what does it affect? It affects my ambitions. You know, why am I mad? Because I have something to do. What does it affect? It affects my ambitions. It affects my personal relations because now it's going to make me late for the next thing. I got to go to meet somebody.
All right, Dad.
Hold on 1 second. We're just going to mute that. Sorry about that. So I look at what is my part in it. You know, what is my part in that irritation? My part is that I probably am not giving myself enough time. Perhaps I'm time deading, or I try to do too many things at once. And then I get angry when people are slowing me down because I think it's the world's, you know, it's the world's job to know that I'm in a hurry and I shouldn't have to wait for people. So that's my part. You know, it's not that person's part that they're taking long or whatever. The disturbance is my disturbance. So then when I look at what my character defect is, you know, maybe my character defect is that I create chaos or that I'm selfish. And so what would I ask myself, like, how would I get rid of the selfishness or how do I get rid of this, like creating this chaos? I look at what would God have me be? So the key question here is what would God have me be? And for me, when I ask myself that, usually what God would have me be is the opposite of what these character defects that are triggering me are. It's the opposite. So rather than being like chaotic with chaos, I would be calm. I would be tolerant, right? I would be keeping it simple. And so it's practicing that over and over and over again that it becomes the muscle memory where, like, I'm at the point today in my recovery where I very seldom have to even write down the 10 steps because I process it so quickly in my mind and I could see what it happens. So I just want to talk about a couple of different types of character defects. And I want to talk a little bit about some things that it says in the big book here. I'm going to start off by talking about in the doctor's opinion, they talk about on page XXVII, Dr. Silkworth writes, "We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception." So what exactly is moral psychology? I'm going to tell you what it is. I defined it. Moral psychology is the study of moral identity development or how people integrate moral ideals with the development of their own character. Let me just say it again. It is the study of moral identity, of the development of our identity, and how we integrate our moral ideas into the development of our character. So the psychologists knew even back in the 30s that it was like our character and our ideals that needed to change. But what they did not know how to do for their patients was have a vehicle in order for them to have this change in their life. And the miracle is that the 12 steps is that vehicle. That is the vehicle that we use in order to change our ideal of who we would be or who we are, how we show up, and what God would have us be in this world. So on page XXIX, in the doctor's opinion, page 29, it explains what happens after we've had this transformation by working the steps. It says, "On the other hand, and strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, once this psychic change," and I believe the psychic change is the change in our thinking, "has has occurred. The very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that he's required to follow a few simple rules. In our case, it's food. But what are those rules? The rules are working the steps for me. The rules are working the steps. So let me just tell you, on page 70, it talks about an ideal. So when I do my 10th step every day, in the end of the fourth step, we do a sex harm inventory. And in Big Book talks about at the end of the sex harm inventory that we are supposed to be creating an ideal of what we would look like in our sex life or in our relationships with the people that we have in our lives. And I believe that I create an ideal at the end of every 10th step. And that ideal is simply a very simple question. The question is, what would God have me be without these character defects? That's it. That is the ideal. And so the Big Book says that we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and the strength to do the right thing. And this is how I know that that ideal is the opposite of what's not the right thing, which is my character defects, which are how I punish myself and others by practicing those character defects. So I want to give you a couple of examples of some character defects that have been brought to my own attention that I have been working on very feverishly in my life. The first one is anger. I learned something very, very important about anger in these past couple of years, and that anger is really masked fear. I'll say it again. Anger or resentment really stems from fear. And the reason why I'm angry is because I'm afraid that I'm not going to get something the way I want it. Or I'm afraid that there's some type of an injustice. I'll put it differently, that there's an injustice. And I'm afraid that that injustice somehow is going to affect me. And that comes down to selfishness. So that's what I want to talk about. Fear, pride. Self-esteem. Oh, God forbid somebody should find out that I'm not perfect. You know, boy. Or like, even what about like trying to push myself on other people, my ideal, that self-righteousness. You know, I mean, what if somebody finds out that I make a mistake? Oh, then I'll be invalidated. You know, these are like all these types of things that I used to think of. And so because I was so afraid with my pride and the fear of being seen as less than, sometimes I would become aggressive and angry and push myself. Or I would try to like outdo people or outdo things so that I could be better. So somehow you could love me, because the truth of the matter was, is I could not love myself. And so my self-esteem always came from what I thought you thought about me. So today I don't live like that at all. You know, one of the biggest things in change in my life is the ability to outgrow fear. I used to always say that I had the Chicken Little syndrome, and I was diagnosed at one point with an anxiety disorder. I rarely suffer from anxiety anymore. I rarely do. And I'm going to tell you why, because the format that I use for fear in the step four, we just heard about that in the session before about the fear and doing a 10th step about our fears. The format that I use in that has helped me to outgrow my fear. And it doesn't mean that I never experience fear. It's that I don't let it affect me in the way that it was affecting me. I don't allow fear to stop me from doing something that needs to be done. I don't allow fear to stop me from living my life. I want to get to this point where I tell you that my higher power has changed over the, 24 years that I've been in program. It has evolved. It's been many things. When I came in, I had a religious God. I no longer have a religious God. As a matter of fact, I really don't even affiliate myself with religion anymore. I live a much more spiritual life now. Very, it's not to say that I won't go to religious ceremonies. I go sometimes with my family or whatever, and I still get stuff out of it. I think religion is wonderful. I think it's fantastic. But for me, I don't have a punishing God. I was taught that there was a punishing God. And I was, no wonder I was always afraid with anxiety. You know, that's how I was brought up. And I grew up in a family where everything was scary. I was told, like, don't go in front of the refrigerator with wet hair. You're going to get sick. Don't go in the 4-foot pool after a sandwich. You can drown. I mean, like, it's like ridiculous things that I was, don't stand outside. Somebody might take you. I mean, like, this, these were like the stories that I was told when I was growing up. And none of those things ever happened. They didn't. But it put seeds in my head of all types of anxiety and fear of things that were not true. Now, fear has its place. It's an emotion that was given to us because it's an instinct. If I'm in the woods and a bear starts charging at me, I'm scared with good reason, because that fear is going to produce an adrenaline and make me run faster or whatever. Or for whatever reason, fear does have its place and its use. But sitting here today worrying about what's going to happen for Easter, the holiday that's not even here yet, when it's only February, that's not going to do me any good. That's serving, all it does is it's futurizing and it's taking me away from my present. I have a higher power today that provides the environment, the willingness, the opportunity, and the teachers that I need to change. But I am the person who is responsible for doing the work. I like to often say that the relationship I have with my higher power is that of a navigation system and the driver. I use my higher power as the navigation system to tell me where to go, and I can set that whole thing up. But if I don't actually get in the car and drive, I'm not going anywhere. And that is why it is so important that I take the actions that are necessary in order to make this change happen. First thing I need to do is to be entirely abstinent. Because when I'm entirely abstinent, I then I get those feelings in my gut when something's wrong. I found out a few years ago that we actually have brain cells in our gut, which was a shock to me, but we have over 100 million brain cells in our gut. So when I'm putting all types of foods and junk and chemicals into my body, those brain cells in my gut are not doing their proper job. And I truly believe that that is why entire abstinence is so important, because when I remove all of those toxins from my gut, I now have access to much more brain cells, and I can process things differently than I can when I have a belly full of the wrong food. And so entire abstinence is essential for change for me and essential for right processing. So once I've got that down, now remember, we're not on step one. We're moving forward here to step 6 and 7. So that's all I want to say about that. But at this point, I put the knife and the fork down, and I'm starting to feel when things don't feel right to me. When things don't feel right to me, I do a 10th step and I inventory my feelings. When I inventory those feelings, I come out with those character defects. And then I ask myself, what would God have me be? So remember I told you that I have a different relationship with God now, you know? I've got it down to one word, and I will tell you what that is. And many of you have heard me before, you know what this word is. The word is simply courage. My higher power is courage. That is all I need to know. I woke up last Saturday and I had a lot to do to prepare for this retreat. I have a lot of workload and a lot of different things going on in my life all at the same time. And I woke up with my old friend. Maybe you guys know it. It's called anxiety. I was revved up and I couldn't stop. And I didn't know. And it was like, it lasted for a few minutes. I hadn't had my quiet time yet. I was in the first time I was in the bathroom in the morning, and I thought to myself, wait a second, I forgot that my higher power is courage. And I want to tell you that I literally took a lipstick pencil that I don't use, girls, an old one. And on my bathroom mirror, I wrote the word courage. I wrote the word courage. And I took a deep breath. I took my quiet time. I allowed my mind to get settled. And then I also remembered that I have the ability to change what I think. Same circumstances, same life, Same issues that I'm facing, different thoughts, different feelings, different reaction. I took a deep breath. I instantly felt better. I feel so much better knowing that I have courage on my side. And I know that whenever I do what I have to do with that courage, that I take one step and my higher power takes 10 steps to me. And whatever it is that I have to do is going to turn out okay. And so, of course, I did have a really good day that day. Another thing I want to talk about is self-reliance. I didn't even know that I run my life on self-reliance. And my sponsor had me ask this question right from the big book. Every time I do a fear inventory, which in the beginning was basically every day I had to do a fear inventory, several sometimes. And I would ask myself this question, do I realize that I'm relying on finite self and not infinite God? Do I realize that I'm relying on finite self and not infinite God? And I always used to say, yes, I realize I'm not relying on God right now. And I would get angry because defiance was also one of my character defects. And I would say to her, why do I have to answer the same question? It's always the same. Yes, I am self-reliance. Yes. Well, the reason is because it literally took me 6 years. Hold on, let me get my fingers straight here. 6 years to figure out that self-reliance is the reason why I'm in fear. Because I think that I should be running the show. And when I'm trying to run the show on myself, it's too big of a job for me. Not my page scale. Too big of a job. So I have to take it down a notch and just do the things that I can do. And when I do my fear inventory, I come up with an action plan. I ask myself, what am I afraid of? And then do I realize I'm relying on myself and not God? And then the question I ask next is, what can I do so that this doesn't happen? And then I come up with an action list. And then that action list, for example, like I have a fear of death. I used to have a fear of death. What can I do so that that doesn't happen? Well, the first thing I could always, always do is ask God to remove the fear. I can simply ask that I get the fear is removed. Very, very basic, but I used to always forget to do it. What else can I do so that I don't die? Well, I can go to the doctor. I can eat healthy. I can continue to recover. I can, at the end of the day, though, I can do all of those things. And when I ask the question, what can I do so that I can't die? The answer is nothing, because inevitably, I'm going to end up dying someday anyway. And then I say to myself, what character defects keep me from doing that action plan? And this is very important. What character defects would stop me from asking God to remove the fear? And I'm going to go full circle back to self-reliance. That is the problem.
2 minutes.
Thank you. What character defects would keep me from following my food plan? Overeating. Overeating is a character defect. You know, I've never realized that overeating was actually a character defect that I could ask God to remove. And how does it get removed? It gets removed by me taking the opposite action again and again and again and again, like that physical therapy for my soul. I have to keep practicing the right action. The right action is to stay abstinent. Eventually, it will be lifted on a daily basis, one day at a time, as long as I'm willing to practice the opposite. What would keep me from continuing to recover? Probably laziness. Probably negativity or negative thinking. I want to touch on that before I close, because I was constantly thinking negative. If I challenge anybody to think in a course of a day, try to catch yourself. How many negative thoughts do you have in a day? How many times are you thinking something negative in a day? And then when you start to recognize it, realize that you don't have to think that way. It's just as easy to think positive and be shocked if something bad happens than to constantly futurize and think it's going to be doomsday and be shocked when it's not. Why do I have to be that way? Just because that's what I've always done, it doesn't mean that I have to live like that today. So also, what would keep me from doing nothing? Because ultimately, there's nothing I can do about dying. And one of the things that would keep me from doing it, nothing, is obsessing over it. Futurizing over it, right? So I have to say to myself, I can stop obsessing and thinking about it. In the beginning, now that's a really hard thing to do. And I realize I'm running out of time. In the beginning, what I used to do is challenge myself. I would look at the clock and say to myself, okay, I'm not going to think about this for 3 hours. In 3 hours, if I'm still feeling this way, then I'm going to start getting scared. But I'm going to delay that for 3 hours. And I would work myself with baby steps into becoming that person that God wants me to be, just a little increment at a time. But the only way that I can do this is by doing the work. And I do want to tell you that in the short time I have left, I do have a life right now beyond my wildest dreams. Sometimes I say to my friends, you know, can somebody pinch me? Because I cannot even believe that this is my life. I don't have time to go into it. But if you want to call me, I will tell you, I promise you. I spend most of my time smiling, even when things are hard. Because with a higher power, like courage, what could really get in my way? And I'm going to leave time on the clock for all of you to share. But thank you so much. My name is Toni Ann. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here. I pass.